Well, thanks for coming. I just want to say, I really love making PowerPoint slides as an artist, but unfortunately, I didn't have time to make PowerPoint slides, so I'm just going to leave that up there because this is about culture wars, and it's just a little reminder as we go. I'm going to follow the handout you have, just kind of go through it with some amplification, and I hope to get done in time for some questions and discussion, and I have two stories I really, really want to tell you. So let me say a prayer real quick, and then we'll get started. Father in heaven, I just want to thank you for this week. Thank you for these past few days, a chance to get away from the hamster wheel and just focus on you, hear from your people, hang out with your people. Just thank you for being a good father to us.
Amen.
Thank you for all the gifts you give us, God. Gift of salvation, gift of your spirit, gift of a new covenant, gift of a kingdom that can't be shaken. And gift of one another. We just bless you for all these things and so much more. Pray for this time. Pray that with people here would find it equipping, encouraging, inspiring. I pray that you would have your way with us for the rest of this week. I pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Tell you a little bit about myself. I am not a pastor. I don't do that much public speaking. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay. Just give you a brief little bit about myself. I was raised in a very secure Christian home. Raised in the Southern Baptist Church. As we say in the Southern Baptist Church, I was going to church 9 months before I was born. Twice on Sundays, every Wednesday, and then some. Had a great experience there. I heard the gospel there. I had a great youth group I was a part of. Some really good friends. Just a good experience. Heard the gospel there, got saved. Understood the concept of Jesus as Lord while I was there and submitted to the Lordship of Jesus when I was 16. Had me saved when I was 9. It was a great, great experience. I was, from the time I was a little kid, it was pretty obvious I was a gifted artist. Everyone assumed I grew up to be an artist. Unfortunately, I wanted to do that, so I went off to art school after high school. And my parents, bless their hearts, were probably a little naive about where they were sending me. But little did they know that every value and belief that I grew up with would be tested every day at the Art Institute. My favorite story is first day of class as a freshman, I'm in this room full of people, and I looked pretty much more normal than almost everyone there because the art school culture is just like it's just super unconventional. I was just a suburban white kid going to art school. And one of the professors asked if there were any Christians in the room to raise their hands.
Wow.
So I think two of us did. And he just kind of got this smirky smile and said, well, we're going to see what we can do about that. So that was one of my first experiences there. But what happened, though, was while I was there, I learned to think critically. I learned to look at my beliefs and see if they would hold up under scrutiny. Look at the Bible and see if it holds up under scrutiny. And I'm happy to say that it does. And I think that it was during that time I developed this belief that the Bible, if it's true, then we don't have to worry about it being disproven. We can test it and we can search it, and God knows more than we do, and pretty sure if somebody wanted to debunk the Bible, they would have done it by now, but I don't think it's going to happen. So I started attending a Great Commission church while I was at art school in 1980, so I met my artist wife, Molly, who's there, at art school. She was not a believer at the time when we met, eventually did become a follower of Jesus. We have 5 children together. They all love Jesus. They all live near us. They live in a town's distance away. We have our third and fourth grandchild on the way. And super blessed for all that. We spent half of our marriage in the inner city in Kansas City in a pretty rough environment, and we spent the second half in Loveland, Colorado, which is kind of the opposite of that. We're in the inner city of Loveland now. We're just like right by downtown, but yeah, we love it there. We attend Baker's Gate Church. I've always been interested in worldview, and more recently in groupthink and why people change their minds or why they don't. Still learning about that. I'm highly concerned over how polarized and divided our culture has become. And so I would say every day, close to every day, I'm sort of engaged in that in some way. So we're a little bit what I want to talk about here. I'll do more on that as we go. I'd love to know more about you. I wish I could ask why you're here today and what you hope to get out of it. But instead, let me just ask a couple of questions, just so I can kind of see who I'm talking to. How many of you are generally pleased with evangelicalism's approach to the culture wars? It's not really a right answer. I just want to see where you are. You think it's going well? We're on the right path? Okay, a couple people. Cool. How many would say you are generally disappointed by evangelicalism's response to the culture wars? Okay, a few more. I assume the rest of you are somewhere in between. Sometimes we hit it, sometimes we don't. Okay, this is completely unrelated, maybe. And this is just an opportunity. Seldom do we get people across the country, and I always wonder about this stuff, and I never get to ask a group at the same time. How many have attended Bill Gothard's Institute of Basic Life Principles or used his ATI homeschool curriculum or are familiar with, you even know what I'm talking about? Okay, quite a few. And we won't get into specifics, I'm just curious. Completely unrelated, how many would you say you were a fan of The Chosen TV series? Me too. Okay, just curious to see who I'm talking to. One more. How many of you would say you know someone who is currently deconstructing or has recently deconstructed their faith, if you know what I'm talking about? Okay. Cool and sad, but all right, thanks. All right, I just want to do a kind of brief sort of survey. I call this describing the water. What I'm seeing in the culture, and again, this is what I'm seeing. Maybe in your part of the country, it's different. Sorry, I get distracted with paintings. But first, I'm going to talk about evangelicalism. I've got a definition on your sheet there. It's a dictionary definition. I kind of use the word evangelical over Christian because the word Christian is so broad. It almost includes almost anything. I mean, everything from, you know, liberal denominations, theologically liberal denominations, to Mormonism, to Jehovah's Witness, that sort of all fall under the category. If Christ is a central figure, people feel justified in calling that Christian. So evangelicalism, the definition there talks about a belief in the authority of Scripture and a high value on believing in salvation through faith in the atoning work of Jesus. That's what I am, and I think that's what you all need to be. So that's why I'm using the term evangelicalism as opposed to Christianity, because it's a little more specific and it actually is descriptive. I think, in my opinion, the past few years have been pretty rough for evangelicalism. I think, in my opinion, the cultural issues that we're dealing with are getting trickier to navigate. And at this point, I'm going to stop saying, in my opinion. You can just assume that everything else from here on out is in my opinion. And one of my biggest concerns is that we are losing our witness in the eyes of the world. not because of our association with Jesus, but because we're seen as not representing Jesus. I'm not saying that's true, I'm just saying that's what I hear from people I'm talking to who have left the church. And here's just a brief survey describing what our COVID. During COVID, Christians were widely viewed as uncaring and arrogant, focusing on their own individual rights, even to the point of putting others at risk. Not saying that's true, I'm just saying that's how we were viewed by my liberal friends and by people I've dialogued with who are not churched people. Think about gay marriage and gender ideology. It's really difficult to frame opposition to gay marriage in a compassionate way, or in a way that sounds compassionate to progressives or liberals or non-believers or secularists. It just feels to them like it's not hurting you. You're just trying to impose your religious beliefs on everyone else. You're a bigot, you're a hater, so on, right? And I say, so it's trickier to navigate because things like even the pro-life position, even if a person disagreed with us, they could go, I can see why you think, you know, it's a human life. So they can at least see how we think our position is compassionate with gay marriage. It's difficult to frame it that way, although I think it's possible if somebody wants to raise that in the Q&A. I'm giving my opinion on that. But same with gender ideology, although I think it's easier to make a compassionate argument for withholding gender affirming care for kids who are calling themselves trans kids. But anyway, so with race, I've been interested in racial reconciliation for decades, like from the time I was in art school. It's almost been a passion of mine, and I don't even think there can be such a thing as an evangelical Christian who is consciously racist, that is, who holds a belief in racial superiority of one race over another. I think you gotta pick a lane. If you want to be a follower of Jesus, you can't hold that view. If you want to hold that view, you're something else, but you're not following Jesus. I think the Great Commission just itself smacks that down. But even the issue of racial reconciliation or race, first with BLM and then with critical race theory, CRT, I think on balance, the evangelical response has probably not felt like a caring response toward the black community, at least for secularists or atheists or, you know, progressives. And I say that again from talking with these folks. Okay. Those issues are all debatable. I think you can make an argument that we have been holding a compassionate position. I'm making some assumptions here. But then there are recently, speaking of evangelicals having a rough go here the last few months, there are things that are deserved, criticisms that are deserved. So I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church and had a great experience, but I was dismayed to find out about these, I guess, some two decades of sexual misconduct and abuse. And not only that, it was going on in the church, but it was being covered up. It's just worthy of repudiation. And that's what's happening. Similarly, and more recently, Amazon Prime Video just released a record-breaking debut of a four-part docuseries on the Duggar family called Shiny Happy People. Basically, I thought it was a hit piece, but there was definitely some bad things that deserved being exposed. Again, more sexual abuse. And they were highly connected to, it sounds like almost a mascot for Bill Gothard and the IBLP thing. And all of these things have touched me personally. I attended Bill Gothard's seminars. We didn't do the homeschooling curriculum, but we've attended the seminars. Purity culture's taken a hit, but what has come to be called purity culture. We raised our kids as youth group attendees, and with that, philosophy or whatever you want to call it, and they had a good result. And it's there's a lot of broad brushing going on right now, but it's all being used to kind of say evangelicals like a losing proposition. We have nothing to offer, and we're actually on the wrong side of everything. So, does this resonate with you guys? Are you seeing the same things where you are in your towns and cities and so forth? Okay. Do you have any questions or comments at this point that you would like to clarify or would want me to clarify? Yes, sir?
Yeah, at the risk of sounding uncaring and arrogant, we were right on all of those things that you said. It's communists who are perverting the race issue. Mm-hmm. It's, the Bible is true. Like you said, how do you sound caring and compassionate on those issues of gender?
Yeah.
We were right about the risks of the COVID vaccine and the lack of effectiveness of masks.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I'm just describing the water. I'm not advocating for or against any position at this point, because I'm going to get to what I think we can do. Thanks for that contribution. My point is that for many people, and I think these are probably the people that we should want to reach the most. evangelical born-again people have become increasingly associated with right-wing politics and hate. Again, I'm not saying that's true necessarily, but I see this as a problem, because Jesus holds up love as the mark that should distinguish who we are as his followers. Greatest commandment, love God. Love people. The way that the world will know we're his disciples is if we love one another. And God loved the world and sent his son, and so these are the people we should be reaching. And so on one level, I don't want to go like, well, we really need to be worried about what people think of us. But it's a problem if we're seen as hateful and bigoted and racist and all these other things, transphobic and anti-gay, and these labels that get thrown out as soon as it just disagreement surfaces, right? So let's talk about love. I think I'm heading on there that says, remember compassion. Here's a verse that strikes me. It's struck me for some time. Is this distracting to you guys? If it's not, if somebody even knows how I can shut it off, I don't. Okay, this verse says, and because lawlessness will be increased, the love of God will grow cold. This is Jesus talking about the last days. I think we're seeing lawlessness increasing, not that we don't have laws anymore, but I think that word is Torahlessness. It's a God's standard is increasing. It's lawlessness is being increased. And the love of many will grow cold. So I think it's important to note that's not a command. He's not saying, yay, the love of many will grow cold. He's just telling what's going to happen. But I think we don't have to do that. I think it's going to happen, but I want to be one of the ones whose love isn't growing cold. Okay? So when I say remember compassion, how can we love people who stand for things that we might consider to be reprehensible? So I have two reminders for us to bear in mind. First, if you heard Pat's talk today, he talked about this in the breakout session. Many people are protecting themselves. Most of us are protecting ourselves. That's what we do. Many people have been wounded. Many are believing lies. Many suffer the effects of coming from dysfunctional homes or relationships. Many haven't seen the beauty and fulfillment of a good marriage or a caring family. Many have been wounded by the church. I would say probably a lot of us in this room can say that. And they haven't seen the beauty and fulfillment of a balanced church culture. Many are suffering from the effects of abuse, isolation, emotional pain. So the point is, people are hurting. And remembering that, knowing that people are suffering, increases my patience with people with whom I disagree. Perfect love casts out fear. Love gives me the courage to go ahead and reach out and talk to them. Okay, and just as a side, I put a link to my blog post called How Wounded People Have Shaped Culture. It's just an interesting study I did once on world leaders, movement leaders, philosophical leaders, ideological leaders, and their family backgrounds. It's pretty stark to see. And, okay, second thing I want to remind us of is the beliefs and actions of an individual proceed from that individual's worldview. This is almost the whole enchilada, in my opinion. It's like, if you believe that we are all here as a result of a mindless cosmic accident, you will reach different conclusions about life than someone who believes that we are here as a result of being created by a loving, relational creator. And in some ways it makes sense to think the way these folks think, who don't acknowledge God, don't acknowledge where they came from. So when we engage in the culture war, we should be engaging in a spiritual battle for the mind and heart, the person with whom we are engaging. But when we say battle, we need to think spiritual battle. Different tactics than how the world works. You might have noticed, I've noticed, winning a partisan argument seldom changes a person's mind. In fact, there are like psychological brain science things that say when someone's shown something that's, when they're shown to be wrong, they tend to dig in, not go, huh, I guess I was wrong about that. And you may have noticed that. Laws do not change the human heart. We're not going to change the culture, in my opinion, or even individual hearts through coercion, or through electing Christian politicians, which is not to say we shouldn't vote. I'm talking about going for the heart here. Have you ever been in a situation where there really is a right answer, and you know what it is? Like, you know what it is. But you're just helpless to keep a person from just, like, walking right off a cliff. I've seen that so many times. And the reason is because having the right answer doesn't help if a person won't listen. You can't make a person listen and believe the truth. And it's super sad. I mean, I think we've all seen people with addictions and destructive behavior that hurts. So what can we do? So I'm getting to the practical New Covenant response. We can open the door. We can seek mutual understanding, emotional connection, and respectful dialogue with our neighbor who sees the world differently than we do. So I want to clarify here. This requires balance. I'm not saying the issues our culture is facing don't matter or that they're not important. They're profound. We're talking about parents' rights. Children's rights, the very redefinition of male and female, sex and gender, marriage, family, parenting, and even what it means to be a human being. Like, these things are all on the table now, and it's crazy. And I'm not saying that these differences are no big deal, it'll blow over, or that we should compromise the truth. I'm advocating that we establish empathetic connection with people so that we can have a platform from which to share the truth as we understand it. Love, humility, and service open the door, and love continues to be the best motivator. Love, as opposed to guilt, shaming, coercion, majority rule, or whatever other tactics. So for the past several years, I've been intentional about respectfully reaching out across lines of disagreement. For me, this is part of what it means to be a minister of reconciliation. We're going to read that verse in a minute. I'm trying to do this through my art, my blogging, my social media engagement, and via Zoom. I'm striving, even in my social media engagement, to go past mere arguments and reach the heart, reach people at a heart level. Sometimes it requires receiving insults and not returning hatred. It requires acknowledging when a person that you disagree with makes a valid point. These are things that open the door for people. Unfortunately, it's not unusual to see believers returning insults when they're insulted. And I'm convicted that I need to call my fellow believers out to a biblical standard when I see that. And then I'll just say one more thing about this stepping way back. I have no idea what y'all think about, you know, who's running the world and conspiracy theories and everything that falls under that category. But I'll just say, it looks to me like there are forces out there intentionally seeking to create division and chaos. And I think refusing to hate, condemn, or otherwise dehumanize our opponents circumvents the strategy of the enemy, whoever that is. And whatever you believe about that, I don't see how this can be wrong. Totalitarian forces cannot control or predict godly character and self-sacrifice. The way of Jesus runs counter to the tactics of control and manipulation. Let's read that verse. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. All this is from God, who through Christ reconciled us to himself and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. He gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Ultimately, we hope to reconcile people to God. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting to us the message of reconciliation. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. 2 Corinthians. Okay, that's basically what I want to say. I want to tell you two stories that are, the first one in particular is one of my favorite examples. This is like my favorite day I ever had in church, this story. That's not my church, but it was so cool. So Molly and I live in Loveland. There's this big church called Resurrection Fellowship. It's the largest, it used to be anyway, largest charismatic church in Northern Colorado. It was started by this guy who kind of aged out of the pastorship and gave it to this younger guy named Jonathan Wiggins. Awesome name. And so this thing happened a few years ago. Some of you may have heard of it, heard about it. I don't know. It made the news. It made the New York Times. So the Loveland Museum, of which Molly and I are associated, put on a display in our exhibit, traveling exhibit, and one of the artists' name was Enrique Chagoya. This guy's I think he's a professor at Stanford. Is that right? Something like that. He's a big time, successful artist who was in this show, and he had a piece in this display case under glass. It was like a fold out thing, and it kind of implied, it depicted Jesus performing a sex act on a guy, and the Christian community got pretty upset about that, started picketing the museum. And then, I think that made the New York Times, because, you know, censorship, even though it wasn't censorship. But then, some woman came down from Wyoming and smuggled in a crowbar under her clothes and went into the exhibit and smashed the display case, and that made the New York Times. And so the picketing got worse, and then a lot of these pickers were from this church, Resurrection Fellowship, and they're talking to this new young pastor, J. Jonathan, they're like, you need to do something. You need to take a stand. You need to be out here with us. You know, this is, you know, stand up and be a man or whatever. So guess what he did? He called Enrique Chagoya, the artist. And he said, I can imagine Enrique Chagoya getting this call. Oh, there's a pastor on the phone from Loveland, Colorado for you. but Jonathan made it clear. He's like, hey, I'm calling just to hear, you know, hear your thinking. Like, what are you thinking? What were you thinking when you did this? And I just want to understand your position. So they had a conversation. And they had another conversation. And come to find out, Enrique Chagoya is like, he goes, I just see Jesus as this symbol that people in power use to impress, you know, the poor and the weak. And he's in his mind, he's an Hispanic dude, he's thinking the Catholic Church and the priests abusing kids in the Catholic Church, which is something to rightfully be upset about, right? And he was upset about it. And then he asked Jonathan, how do you see Jesus? This is how this works. And Jonathan said, I see Jesus. He ended up writing a song about it. He wrote this whole thing. It's really beautiful. I couldn't find it to link to you guys, but if you want to hear it, I can find it for you. The song's called I See Jesus, if you want to find it on YouTube. But anyway, he didn't sing the song to Enrique Chagoya. They just had a conversation. But Enrique Chagoya's like, huh, I didn't realize that people consider Jesus to be like this personal friend. I didn't realize this was personal for you evangelicals. He's like, yeah, it is really personal. And so he understood, you know, the hoopla. And they continued to have a friendship. And then Pastor Jonathan gets this brilliant idea. He goes like, hey, I think I would like to commission you to do a painting for our church. Because the guy's heart had turned. He's like, he was almost apologetic. Like, I'm really sorry that I offended these people so badly. It wasn't my intention. I mean, do you see how different that looks from the, you know, this display that goes up and it's like, it just looks like he's a God hater and stuff. So Jonathan says, would you be willing for to let us commission you to do a painting for our church? And Enrique Chagoya was like, no, you can't commission me because I want to give you a painting as a gift to your church. Isn't that amazing? So if you go to Rest Church today, this is like a 6x4 painting of Jesus in the foyer. And I don't personally like it because it looks super Catholic. It's like Jesus holding the keys to death and Hades kind of floating in the air outside of the tomb. It's the risen Christ. He's holding the flag thing, whatever that means. And he donated it to the church. I'm sure it's worth, I don't know, thousands of dollars. I have no idea. But anyway, love that story. Especially as an artist. And it made the New York Times. What?
I think they took it down when they remodeled.
Oh, really?
Sorry.
Whatever. It used to be there. I haven't been there in a long time. Anyway, it made the New York Times that this pastor reached out. And I think the saddest part of the story is that that's newsworthy. Because I think this is what we should be doing, right? We should be reaching out and seeking to understand these people who we think are our enemies or who they think we're their enemies, because they might disagree with us, but we're not haters. So I got one other story, and I hope you don't think I'm like making fun of or calling this guy names, my friend that I put on there. These are his labels. This is how he described himself: an atheist, universalist, Unitarian, bi-coastal, liberal, elite. He's also a Democratic fundraiser, a fundraiser for the Democratic Party. I don't know, I may have left something out there, but the point is, he's almost my perfect opposite. He's like, he's got a master's, I think, from MIT. He works on the edge of Silicon Valley, and actually just retired this week, but he told me, yeah, I live in this liberal bubble. It's just all liberals where I live. And he and his wife are sort of kind of leaders in the church, Unitarian Church. So what happened was with this, let me see where we are. Okay. My story is not as cool as the one I just read, so I'll go through it quickly. But he and I connected through a group called Braver Angels. And I've got a link on there to that organization. It was accidental. I was watching a debate with this Braver Angels group, and there was a chat going on, and some guy goes, I'd really like to talk to a Trump supporter if I could find one, someone willing to talk. And I just the debate was almost over, and I didn't have time to figure out how to, I'm not a tech guy, I didn't figure out how to respond directly to him, so I just responded to the whole group chat, and I said, well, I wouldn't really call myself a Trump supporter, but I did vote for him twice, and I am definitely a conservative, so if that's good enough for you, I'd love to talk to you. And debate ended, things closed. I gave him my email address. So the next day I get an email, but it's not from the guy I was addressing, it's from Bruce. And he's like, well, I know you weren't talking to me, but I'd like to get together and talk to you. So we started this relationship, and it's been over 2 years now. We meet every other week via Zoom. And the point of Braver Angels is not to try to convince the other person that you're right. The point is to understand one another. It's just to promote understanding. And we were down with that. Bruce and I are not really following protocol, so I mean, I am trying to convince him, and he's trying to convince me in some ways, but we have permission to sort of challenge each other, and this has been ongoing for 2 years, and we've talked about everything. And one of the fun points is you guys know, does anyone listen to the Holy Post podcast? A couple people, Phil Vischer, creator of VeggieTales. He listens to that regularly now. And he's telling me, I think you should be concerned because I agree with most of what these guys say, except for the Jesus stuff. But anyway, one of our sons travels around as a professional athlete. They're in a different home every weekend throughout most of the year. When they went to California, he stayed with Bruce and Maeve. A couple times Molly and I have had Zoom dinners together and just to talk about stuff. But I consider him a friend now. And I'm praying for him. I really, really wish I could tell you a really cool, what I consider to be a God development. He doesn't. It's really cool and dramatic, but I don't know that I have permission to share this part of his personal life, so I won't do that. But I'm just saying, despite all my awesome, mind-blowing arguments that aren't working, I feel like God's working in other ways, in ways that I couldn't even have dreamt of. So, and again, he doesn't see it that way, but that's my opinion. So anyway. As far as resources go, I just want to talk about Braver Angels a little bit. It's really the only one I have. This is kind of a big deal. After about 6 months of our conversations, Bruce says, I think I want to talk about what our relationship, our friendship to at my church, because we have these 5-minute reflection times in the service. It's a Unitarian church. And then the next week we get together, he's like, I think you should talk too. I'm like, really? And so what ended up happening was we got together with his pastor. If nothing else, you should listen to this YouTube video because this pastor has a really cool Scottish accent. But they gave Bruce and I each 2 5-minute segments. And I have a link to that on here if you want to see it. As for Braver Angels, you go to the website, you can poke around, you can go to YouTube, type in Braver Angels. It used to be called Better Angels, after the Abraham Lincoln quote, something about our Better Angels, but there was a copyright thing, so if I could change it to Braver Angels, which is kind of vain. But anyway, it does take courage to do this. This is a hard thing for a lot of people to reach out across lines of disagreement. But Braver Angels will hook you up. Their logo is a red square overlapping a blue square. And they will hook you up with politically someone who's your opposite, or they will hook you up with urban versus rural people, or racial people who are racially different to seek understanding. And they have a format, kind of a scripted format to set you up for success so that you stick with the format. It usually goes really well. I've done this a few times. You can go on YouTube and listen to debates. They'll have debates on there. I participated in some of those. I've never been a primary person, but they're Zoom debates. So there might be 200 people on this Zoom call, and they'll let people ask questions. And it's pretty cool. It's one way to engage with somebody who wants to talk to you. Like, these are people that's like, I really don't get these people. Like if you listen to the video, you can hear Bruce go, what kind of person would vote for Trump twice, you know? And by the way, I'm not voting for him again. I should, probably shouldn't say that. But anyway. anyway, I would urge you to just check it out. See what you think. I don't think there's anything else. I don't want to scare you away with the, we've been doing this for over 2 years, because if you sign up for a one-on-one conversation, they call them, it's 2 one-hour conversations, and then you're officially done. Bruce and I were kind of going rogue, so we're just doing this thing because we kind of hit it off. So yeah, that's something to think about if you're like, I don't know any people like this, or I don't know how to find these people. It's a thought. Okay, so we got, I don't know if we get till 5 or 5:15, but if you need to leave, go ahead and leave. If you want to ask questions or, you know, push back on me or slap me down, I welcome that. Yes, sir.
I heard you touch a little bit on, like, voting for politicians that, you know, more align with, you know, biblical views, that kind of thing, but how do you approach things that feel a little more untouchable, like boycotting companies or voting for politicians or that kind of thing?
Personally, I'm not opposed to that. I mean, I just don't think that's going to change hearts. But I think it can send a message to a company. I mean, as long as you're on my blog site, if you want to see it, it depends. I'll just admit this and put myself, I'm kind of annoyed with the boycott called against The Chosen because of the pride flag that showed up on their set. I just wrote a blog post about that, and I give my reasons for that. I understand the sentiment. I understand why some believers are doing that. But, you can just read the blog post. I don't want to necessarily go into all that right now. But I think Dallas Jenkins he doesn't have a litmus test for people that they hire, and the guy that had this flag was a contractor. It's like, great. I'm glad these people are on the set, you know. I even think there could be an LGBTQ person going, hearing about the controversy, and is like, why would there be a pride flag on this set? What is this all about? And start watching the series and see the real relational Jesus is depicted in that series. And it's like, God wants to use that. I'm all for it. Dallas Jenkins said, I don't support pride. I mean, he did not endorse the LGBTQ agenda. He doesn't censor people's personal spaces because he doesn't like it when it's done to him. That's what he said. But so I don't like that boycott, but I think others, depending on if it's clear, sometimes they don't work. I mean, there's a lot of times I've seen Christians boycott movies, and it just makes more people go see the movie.
Right.
So I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's like not my favorite thing. I'd much rather go for changing hearts, and I think the way you change hearts is to open the door and have a dialogue. Yes.
Do you have thoughts on how Christians receive their news sources? Because so much of our media is heavily skewed towards the right or towards the left. I personally believe more of our media is skewed towards the right, and that sometimes Christians seek out a little bit of a feedback cycle in terms of finding new sources that edify their beliefs instead of being willing to engage with just a really black and white perspective on how things are. So thoughts on news information, how we receive media, with like Romans 12:2 in mind, the, you know, transform your minds.
Right. Yeah, I can just give you my opinion, but also I want to say, this is not just a Christian problem, this group think, you know, bandwagon mentality. Everybody, this is human nature. It's like, scientists have this. It's like, there's this idea out there that the scientists are like these Spock-like people who don't have emotions, just go, you know, just follow the data. But, I mean, it depends on where the funding's coming from. It depends on peer approval. I think we are all so susceptible to peer approval, including academia and professional people. And Bruce agrees with me. But as far as news media, I just read both. We'd have to talk more. I don't really track with you on most of it skewed to the right, but I don't have to work very hard at all to find.
Maybe a way I could clarify that is that I feel that most Christians read news sources that are more right-leaning than they are on a little more balanced.
Right, yeah, because I'm thinking, I go to do email on Yahoo, and the news articles that pop up are not right-wing sources. No. I don't have to work hard to find, you know, CNN and MSNBC or whatever they're called. But I got to go searching out conservative sources or, I don't believe there's any such thing as objectivity, so I don't even expect that from even a reporter. I just don't believe it. I mean, the language that's used, somebody says so-and-so, you know, holds an anti-gay position. It's like, well, let me see what they said and I'll determine if that's an anti-gay position, because just using that term itself, or and conservatives have their own labels, right? I just read them both, and I figure if there are actual facts in there, I'll be able to sort of figure out what's going on, but not that I know what I'm talking about, but that's my solution, is to read both. Wait, she was first.
Christian people that
right.
You know is not
Jesus-y
at all.
Yeah, this is a point I've made with, you know, with two Brave Rangers people, and people are like, what can we do to bridge the divide? And I think one of the most important things we can do, we're probably not going to change many minds on the other side of the spectrum. We might, but that's a hard one. But, excuse me, we might be able to change some minds of our fellow believers. And I just think, I kind of just, in a sentence such and such, I think we need to hold each other to a higher standard. So when I see that, I definitely, if it's a stranger, I may be on social media more than I should be. But if it's a stranger, and it's a public thread, there's no other way for me to do it. Maybe there is, but it's not accusing, but it's just calling them to a higher standard. And if they're identifying themselves as a Christian, I think it's worth doing that. If it's someone I know, I might private message them or something. Because it's hard for anyone to change their mind in public, man. Mm-hmm. It takes a very mature and person of integrity to like admit publicly on Facebook, yeah, maybe you should. But I think it's important to do, because, you know, even I haven't heard any of the talks on gender this weekend other than the main session, but I'm hoping, I'm pretty sure I agree with, you know, just about all of you on what's going on with gender ideology and trans stuff. done a lot of reading on it. I just want to make sure we don't make condemnatory statements in case, because there may be people in this room who have an unwanted same-sex attraction, and we don't want to push those people out of the church. And I know for a fact there's this whole ex-evangelical movement where people feel like there just wasn't a place for me there, and I couldn't talk to anyone about this. And even women who have been, where there's sexual misconduct, because of the submission teaching, don't feel the freedom to go to someone, or if they do go to someone, go to a pastor, they're smacked down. It's like, we're not talking about a critique of the biblical doctrine of submission and authority. We're talking about something askew, that we need to create a place where, you know, we can do this stuff, love, humility. But to answer your question, yes, I think, you know, I am personally committed to holding my brothers and sisters to a higher standard. And that kind of like mocking, snarky, it just puts the walls up right away. And there's no way it might feel like you're building solidarity or community, but it's the wrong kind of solidarity or community if that's what's going on.
I understand part of your toolbox. Sorry. For
compassion, love, and stuff like that. But how do you push back whenever they say, oh, you offend me? Because I get that from my granddaughter sometimes. You offend me. It's like, that's my trump card. You're supposed to respect me.
Yeah.
Back off.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really had that happen. I think of verses like, a gentle answer turns away wrath. I think I'm not accusing you of this because I don't know your conversations, but I think speaking the truth in love is a big deal. I think we might not realize how we're coming out. I just think we need to think, how is this being received, you know, on the other end. How old's your granddaughter?
17.
Teenager. Man, can't imagine being a teenager right now with all this stuff going on. I don't have a good answer for you. Sorry, I haven't had that happen. Did anybody else experience that successfully?
So I've encountered that. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is, when it comes to discussions like that, it's how you approach the conversation, debate, or whatever you're having. Mm-hmm. And if someone's first response or their end response, often you'll get the, well, that offended me, you offended me. You can tell one of two things. It's either they're trying to end the discussion and just be done with it, or they're genuinely saying it. And if they're genuinely saying it, you need to go further into that. Well, why did that offend you, and how? And I love what you're saying here. If we go on the basis of Christian principle and how we approach all of these topics, Christ's love will win through.
Yeah. Actually, two things come to mind. I would say, how did the conversation start? Did she even want to have the conversation? Because if that's not the case, if somebody doesn't want to hear, really not a lot you can do. The other thing is, I would say, is there any way I can hold this position? I asked Bruce this like a few weeks ago. I said, I'm kind of in a dilemma here because I don't see how I can hold up the natural nuclear family as the ideal for society without making a gay person feel less than. Can you see a way how I can do that? And it was just like, he just went off on me. So the first time he's done this, but he started talking about gun control. It's like, what? And I just listened. It's like, well, I could counter all those things point by point, but I just let him go. And then he kind of halfway apologizes, and then we had to go. And it's like, we talked about it the next week. It's like, kind of pushed a button there or something, right? But I would ask her, is there any way we can have this conversation without offending you? And how would that be? I would ask her.
Yeah. We picked up the conversation later on. Mm-hmm. It opened the doors for the conversation later on. But mm-hmm. it's their first response.
Yeah.
They're not even, not even thinking when they say it.
Yeah, that's kind of a learned response in some ways. Go ahead.
I'm getting the impression I'm probably maybe more on the liberal side of this, in this room here, so.
It's okay.
Bear with me on this. My brother right here, when we said COVID and communists, that offended me.
Don't go with BLM and communists.
Still offended, but that's okay. That's okay, because that touches a trigger point. It's an emotional response where it touches a trigger point that has a larger meaning. And I think for most people, when they are finding themselves, you know, there's an old saying, all politics are personal, and the personal is political. And so when someone is telling you they're offended by what they're saying, it's something that is happening on emotional, Pat's teaching earlier today, it's an emotional, heart level, soul response that they're not in a place yet to engage intellectually. Mm-hmm. And I think if you are offended, if someone, particularly a family member, a loved one, has said many times, this is offensive to me, it might be a time to cut that conversation off and just have a loving relationship with them that is based on different things.
Yeah. I think you're right on that, and that's the avenue you have to take that I found with her.
Because also, as a more liberal Christian, I've had to do that with a lot of to continue in my faith in a conservative Christian association of churches. Mm-hmm. I've had to make that choice with lots of dearly loved people to just know, like, we're not going to agree on this, and that's okay because. Mm-hmm. Jesus is the foundation of where we stand, and the rest of this stuff, God will sort out in the wash, except for me personally, when it becomes how other people, the way our association, what you started with, the way our witness changes people's understanding of who Jesus is.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I'm glad you're here, and the only problem I have, my only criticism of Brave Angels and groups like it is, They often talk about finding common ground, and I kind of know what they mean, but I pushed back a couple times and said, there might not be common ground. I think the best we can hope for in our culture is pluralism for everyone, freedom and pluralism for everyone, within the constraints of the Constitution, and a free marketplace of ideas, respectful marketplace of ideas, and then we get to see what works, right? But I don't personally hold the view that we're going to redeem the whole culture and present it to Jesus as a perfected, you know, thing. So, thank you. Yes, Paul.
I'm not going to take time on the question, but I think the real thinking that we have to go away from here is the real enemy. And I think somebody mentioned it somewhere along the line. But he, like you said, all this is human nature, and we're the same. If we're kind of ignorant in an area, if we feel like our opinion means something, we're going to, like, just talk with labels and not the real meaning of, a topic. So it's always better to be quiet there. But still, we're going to fall into wanting to just take shortcuts intellectually and everything else, and the enemy is just playing on all of that.
Yeah.
So he's dividing us. It's really not each other, both sides. It's
okay. Maybe just two more. Lori, did I go past you?
Mine might be for another topic. I just wondered something you might have done for race relations, that, like, an example of how you've tried to work in race reconciliation.
Before we moved here, we live in Loveland now, right? It's like, we're finally getting some black people in Loveland. But
so I've actually been told there's no way I'm not racist because I live in Loveland, Colorado.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you have to be racist. that you're there.
Yeah, that's a whole redefining racism that I think is bogus. But we lived in the inner city. We the Art Institute was like smack dab in inner city. We've always lived downtown. We lived in a racially mixed neighborhood.
20 years.
Yeah. I hate to say my best friend's a black person. One of my wife's best friends is a black person. But we sent our kids. The Kansas City School District was horrible. It lost its accreditation. It was so bad. So we were homeschooling, but then our oldest boys started getting, you know, so large that they no longer fit in the house, you know, all the time. And we sent them to an all-black charter school. And I think I told them, it's like, I think it would be helpful, maybe I just told you this, but it would be helpful for them to know what it feels like to be a minority, not knowing we were going to move to, you know, white land someday. But they were there for a couple of years, and then we had, it's I'm interested in, I can't say I've done a lot, but we our kids were, you know, were in a dance studio, and they had amazing black mentors, and it was just part, it was before BLM, before, you know, all this, before racism was brought to the forefront again. It seemed like, you know, things were pretty good. And I will say this, after the George Floyd thing happened, Molly got a hold of some books, actually from talking with a black friend. And when I sort of re-studied a lot of history, our history, read a book on lynching, or a book on the Reconstruction era, that made me weep, because I kind of only grew up hearing, you know, the good things, like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, and before he was shot, and how the laws have been, you know, rectified. And, I do think there's. So I guess in my blogging is mostly what's been my contribution is to, again, like one of my posts, and you can find all this if you go to my blog site. One of my posts was something about for white conservatives. I'm talking to my own people here because I was hearing things. This was like almost like this backlash against the George Floyd thing, or you know, any of the other things that I didn't think was going to be viewed as compassionate by somebody who wasn't on board, with our perspective. And, so, yeah, that's I guess my blog is mostly what I've done. Yeah, watch the movie Just Mercy. I've changed my view on some things as a result of my study. I'm no longer pro capital punishment. I am in theory, but not in practicality. Yes.
I got bigger in this day. So, with the wall, I think that vision in any situation, you need to put on Jesus' sandals every day. Put Jesus' sandals on every day. That will give you a compassionate heart. By visualizing, put on Jesus' sandals every day. Okay? Number two is put on Jesus' robe. Put on his robe and walk in his way. That'll make you even more compassionate. Okay. And three, the bottom line is, if you do those two things, then you act in love with no preset agenda.
Good. Thank you for that. Yeah, Jesus' sandals took him into some very uncomfortable situations. Jesse, did you have?
Yeah, I just wanted to see if you have thoughts on how to steer some of these debates or conversations towards the gospel. Because when I read Romans 1, the picture Paul paints of the culture looks pretty close to the culture I see now. Mm-hmm. And so I think culturally, we're dealing with a lot of the same issues and the same problems. And so I think we can have a lot of debates and dialogues, and I have had some, and they're really stimulating and interesting, and you can gain understanding. But I don't see fruit there. And I struggle to turn conversations to the gospel, and I think that's what we have to do. Like, because we can get deep understanding, and we can help people understand where we are, but if we're not getting the gospel in there, what are we accomplishing? Where are we going?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like this is almost pre-evangelism, because we can't even, we just have no standing now in the culture for a lot of people on the left. I just feel like the seeking understanding thing is opening the door so that we can have a platform. You know, like, if I can explain my position on say, I don't need to dwell on gay marriage, it could be almost anything, but, you know, race, whatever, it's not because I'm trying to convince them as so much as so that they can see I have compassionate reasons for believing what I believe. It's not that I'm racist or that I hate gay people. So it's like, okay, then maybe we can talk. You know, I don't feel like we can talk now because the culture is so toxically divided. But I also think everything leads to God. I mean, almost any topic of a consequence leads to God, except maybe cats, you know, but. Well, dog spelled backwards is God. Just saying. Anyway. So Bruce and I, we're talking about gospel stuff, and I wish I could go into more detail. He doesn't believe it. He didn't see the need for it. He told me one time, you know, even if I'm wrong, I'm going to get in heaven before Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz because I'm helping people. He serves. He serves like crazy. That's what their church does. But that's his perspective. So that's, I haven't had the chance to, you know, lay out the gospel and explain, you know, why that's wrong. But I haven't forgotten that comment, and I know we'll return to it. So it's building relationship. You may not, I mean, I'll say one more thing. I'm not really talking about going and finding the most extreme activists that you can find on the other side. I'm talking about there's a lot of people in the middle who are doing this because they're hearing all this stuff. So I think there are people in the middle who are amenable.